Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
All right, guys, thanks for coming back to the show. This is episode 232, and before we get started, just want to thank Brothers Blend Coffee once more. You know, they've got some exciting things going on, and I can't really release the news yet. But stay tuned, because there's some really cool stuff coming, and I think you guys will really enjoy it. If you like that coffee, www.brothersblendcoffee.com, being put on by Montgomery Lodge in Milford, Massachusetts. It's roasted coffee by the Red Barn Coffee Roasters right there in Hopkinson, Massachusetts. It's local. Very good coffee. Comes in three strengths: Tyler's Cup, Harmony Roast, and Adoniram's Brew. It's like $12 for 12 ounces, maybe a dollar more than that, I think. It's actually $10.69 for a 12-ounce bag, and then the shipping on each bag is $3.99. But if you order 2 to 3 bags or 4 to 6 bags, it's actually a little bit cheaper than that, so you get a little bit of a break every time. So please check that out. Again, really good coffee. Totally enjoy it myself. The coffee actually is raising money for that lodge for fundraisers to support all of their charitable causes, activities, and maintenance of that lodge. Again, really good coffee. Please do check it out. Junior Wardens and Masonic Caterers. You can get good discount if you guys order a lot. You can email sales@brothersblendcoffee.com for more information, and head over to brothersblendcoffee.com to read up about it a little bit more. In the news this week, I hope you guys did enjoy the guest host, Brother Adam Thayer. I do understand a couple of you made comments about the audio quality. I do apologize for that, but it was the best we could do for that particular episode. I have taken the steps to acquire a good podcasting setup for Brother Adam Thayer, which I will be mailing to him, and we're going to work on that together, and we'll have really good increase in quality for the next time he hosts the show. And speaking about Adam Thayer and being on the show, he has agreed to do something really cool for us. He is going to start doing some book reviews for us right here, Masonic books. Right now he is reviewing a book that hasn't even been released yet, and it should be a pretty good book. He's told me already that it's not bad. It's pretty good. So we're going to have that review sometime next month. We'll start those. So be ready for those. In addition to that, I did want to mention the presentation schedule. So if you'd like to come out and hear Masonic Talks, March 15th, Oshkosh, Wisconsin at Waverly Lodge number 51, I'll be doing a presentation about the Word. The presentation can be adapted for Master Masons only, or I can speak to even the profane. So that topic lends itself to a wide variety of ways I can deliver it. On March 19th is the big one. We'll be at the Pennsylvania Academy of Masonic Knowledge, and I'll be speaking with the Masonic Roundtable. There'll be 5 individual presentations, probably running about 20 minutes each, with some Q&A after each one. Again, I will be speaking there. We're going to be hopefully live streaming that event as well, right there from that Academy of Masonic Knowledge campus. So if you would like to go there in person to hang out, to talk, and just have a great time, please do go to their website and make your reservation. It is a free event. They request a small donation for a meal if you're going to eat, but it is open to everybody. And the only thing is, you do have to RSVP to get in. So do that if you want to show up. May 31st, I'll be in Milwaukee, Wisconsin at Damascus 290, and later this year, possibly Honesdale in Pennsylvania. Details to come on that pretty soon. But I'm super flexible with presentations and events, so if you want to have me come out, just shoot me an email. The only thing I ask for ever is lodging and travel if it's over a certain distance. I don't collect any fees or anything. We just have a good time, and again, I look forward to seeing you guys at those dates. And with that, I just wanted to mention, this week we're going to have a really great show. We've got some information on somebody who exemplified Freemasonry pretty well, very well known in the craft. We also have illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison coming on the program to give us the Masonic Minute for this week, and that will be, as usual, amazing. Next week, I will be talking with Frater O, and it's going to be a delightful program. You guys are going to want to prep for that show. And in order to find out how to prepare for that show, you're going to want to go over to the Frater O Facebook page, like the page, and keep an eye out for the update. He will be releasing the topic later this week. You guys will be pleasantly surprised, I think. It's not Star Wars this time. It's not Star Trek or anything like that. But we are going to have a really great conversation about something that he and I totally nerd out about all the time. So that's going to be your only clue. With that, we're going to go right into this week's paper. All right, this paper is called Albert Pike. Albert Pike, born December 29th, 1809, and he passed away on April 2nd, 1891. The paper was by Charles R. Rosenberger, 33rd degree. The New Age is where it was published in April of 1964. In the year 1809, there were many births, all of which completed their life cycle many years ago. We can be certain that many of those lives became mere statistics. But of the old grand total of births that year, we know from the records of the time that relatively few performed service over and above the call of duty to their fellow man, their country, and the world. Among those honored few whose names and achievements left their mark in the sands of time is Albert Pike, the man whose memory we recall with deep reverence and whom we particularly honor today. His was a life that changed his birth from obscurity to fateful prominence, and made his death a tremendous loss to mankind. When his life cycle was completed, he had built a record of achievement which very few men have ever equaled. Albert Pike echoed the words of Benjamin Franklin, who said, "Dost thou love life? Then squander not time, for that is the stuff of which life is made." It would seem that Albert Pike made the most of his time. He started his amazing career early in life, lived 81 years, worked right up to the end, and is said never to have slept more than 4 or 5 hours each night. He had a remarkably strong and virile constitution, a tremendous capacity for brain work, and a prodigious memory. He possessed many talents, each of which he developed to a notable high degree. In his many and varied experiences, he encountered life's joys and sorrows, its successes and disappointments, its hardships and comforts. He came face to face with the bitter and sweet of human nature, its friendliness and its coldness and cruelty. He knew what it was to be hated and despised, and he also knew what it was to be admired, loved, revered, and even idolized. Albert Pike descended from an English family who possessed a background of determination to have that freedom which, for a time, had been denied them, but which they were confident their God meant for them to have. It was one of those families that left England and came to America for the express purpose of pursuing their ideals unhindered. Although poor, they were self-reliant. Albert was true to the family tradition. He believed that he was put on the earth not to just exist, but to achieve. He looked upon life as an adventure, with victories to be won by those willing to try. Try he did. In him was the spirit of the pioneer and explorer, which underlies all our great efforts. He had inherent desires to see what lies beyond the next hill, beyond the horizon. To him, there seemed to be no final horizon. Albert Pike may have been the inspiration for the man who said, quote, "I do not choose to be a common man. It is my right to be uncommon, if I can. I want to take the calculated risk, to dream and to build, to fail and succeed. I will not trade beneficence, nor my dignity for a handout. It is my heritage to stand erect, proud and unafraid, to think and act for myself." End quote. He had many physical advantages, such as a huge frame, a kindly face, dignified appearance, and a soft and pleasing voice. He was a man of culture and good taste, affable and courteous, a ready conversationalist, good storyteller, and just as much at home with erudite and sophisticated people as with those of the woods and plains. Being of a chivalrous nature and having charming personality, he was an equal favorite with men and women. His intimate friends were aware that he was not a saint, but they knew, too, that he was an upright, honest, and honorable citizen who was opposed to evil practices. To them, he was one of the most lovable men who ever lived. He always had an ambition to learn, a desire for wisdom. These inherent qualities propelled him into being one of the world's great scholars. In early youth, in Massachusetts, the state of his birth, he had acquired his schooling and much self-education and training as a teacher before answering the call of adventure, which took him west. In the vast area of that wild and undeveloped country now comprising Oklahoma and parts of New Mexico and Texas, Albert Pike spent some of the most grueling and trying months of his life. He traded, fought, and consorted with Indians, renegade whites, and mixed breeds, the type of human beings which might be expected to inhabit that early day country, all of whom had to be physically rough and tough to even exist. On the prairies, he suffered the pangs of hunger and thirst, and was tortured by merciless summer heat. There were days without shade, and the only water available was stale and muddy. In the wooded areas was the entanglement of vines and briars and the dangers from snakes and wild animals. Sickness, the lack of funds and provisions, the loss of sorely needed horses, their clothes almost useless, forced Pike and his party to abandon his expedition. He and his companions had decided to go to New Orleans. They chose a road leading in that direction, but as they followed it, it tapered down to a footpath and then disappeared altogether. From there, they headed in an easterly direction, eventually arriving at Fort Smith. Thus did Louisiana lose a potentially great citizen, and Arkansas obtained the man who was to become perhaps its most famous citizen. It is well known that when Albert Pike arrived in Arkansas, he was penniless and had to fall back on his teaching ability to obtain a dollar or two necessary for existence. It wasn't long until he was in the newspaper business and soon became owner and editor of a paper in Little Rock. Although this was another field in which he displayed unusual ability as a collector of his accounts, he had little success. A goodly number of his customers could not nor would not pay, and Albert Pike could not or would not make them. This was not the lucrative field for which he was looking, and in a few years, he sold out. In the meantime, however, he had started the self-study of law. He thought he saw, in the new century, a wide-open field for good attorneys. An amusing story demonstrates the point. In a backwoods section, court was about to open to try three murderers and a horse thief, when the judge noticed that one of the jurors was missing, and since the courthouse was in a remote spot, no one was available to fill the vacancy. The defense attorney made a suggestion, and the judge and prosecuting attorney, wanting to move on without delay to the next stop in the circuit, agreed. They put one of the murderers in the jury and first tried the horse thief. He was acquitted. Then they put the horse thief in the jury and tried and acquitted the murderer. By this kind of contrivance, all four were acquitted. Albert Pike's decision in choosing the legal profession was a good one. He made rapid progress and in a few short years became one of the best lawyers of his day in the entire Southwest. This fact is attested to by a large practice he built up. By his having been licensed to practice before the Arkansas and the United States Supreme Courts, by successfully representing several Indian tribes in their claims against the government, and for several references and compositions highly important to the legal fraternity which he authored. In the practice of this profession, it is believed that he amassed several fortunes and at times showed evidence of considerable wealth for that day and time. The home he built in Little Rock was a costly structure and a show place of the day. His legal career extended over many years, practicing in Arkansas, Louisiana, Tennessee, and our nation's capital, and was interrupted only by his participation in the Mexican War in 1840 and the war between the states in the 60s. Undoubtedly, Albert Pike could have been one of America's outstanding statesmen had he heeded the call to enter politics. He was well informed on public affairs, and being an orator with exceptional eloquence, he had the ability to influence votes. But in him there was no desire to hold public office. His contention was that to win success in politics, the masses must be swayed, and to do that, one must profess whatever doctrine suits the times. This, of course, was in contradiction to his belief that the science of government is the science of benefiting the people, and that every political contest should be a contest of principles, and not merely of the benefit of parties or individual contestants. He shrugged off the suggestion that he enter politics, quote, where he could make a reputation for himself, end quote, and followed the advice he gave to others. Be faithful to your country and prefer its dignity and honor to any degree of popularity and honor for yourself. Anyone who seeks a place in the sun can expect to get burned. He who climbs a little higher then the crowd will be the target for knockers. The higher he rises, the more and louder the knocking. Like all forceful men, Albert Pike aroused jealousies and made enemies. Some of the cruelest criticism of all was due to his participation in the Battle of Pea Ridge in the war between the states. In the South, he was not only unjustly accused of cowardice and betrayal of the South because of his northern birth, but actually blamed for the loss of that battle. In the North, he was called a recreant Yankee, and stories were published which claimed that just before the battle, he had purposely aroused the savage instincts of the Indians under his command by giving them whiskey, which accounted for atrocities not condoned by civilized warfare. Although all these charges were subsequently disproven, such fantastic untruths can only, by the medium of time, be completely erased. Albert Pike's position on the question of secession is a matter of record. He used his influence to try to prevent withdrawal from the Union, but when that step became inevitable, he was compelled to take a stand. He had become part of the Southland and his adopted state of Arkansas. Their problems, bad, became his problems. Their destiny, his destiny. He could flee and leave everything, be murdered, or join his neighbors. He chose the latter. Although Albert Pike sincerely believed that there could be secession and peaceful existence, when war did come, he offered his services to the Southern cause. From the experience gained in his early days in Indian country, his continued association with members of various tribes and representing them as their attorney, being with them on hunting expeditions regularly throughout the intervening years, and having learned to speak with some of the chiefs in their own language, he felt that he was qualified to negotiate treaties with a view to keeping the Indians neutral. He was appointed commissioner with the rank of brigadier general. Treaties were made and the Indians organized under the promise that they would be used only within their own borders. Orders from the higher up to use them outside their own territory led to General Pike's resignation prior to the end of the war. From man's beginning, man has been the enemy of man. Were this not so, there would be no need for masonry and the principles it teaches. Man's passion to hate, to envy, to covet, to gain something for himself at the expense of others seems to have no bounds nor end. National heroes, including the beloved father of our country, are now disparaged by some and even ridiculed by others in stories invented or distorted to suit their particular purposes. Albert Pike has been a target for this kind of passion, and to this time, stories will occasionally crop out of the works of some freelance writers who are more interested in fancy and personal benefit than the facts. But God also created in man the passion to love, to be charitable, to weigh the good against the bad, and so long as mankind will defend and exemplify the spirit of love, the spirit of George Washington will live, as will the spirit of Albert Pike. The Civil War marked a turning point in the life of Albert Pike. For several years following its close, he was restless. He could not practice law until he had been pardoned for his activities with the Confederacy. Although he'd loved people and loved to be with them, contrary to his nature, he went in seclusion and devoted more of his time to the Masonic duties and to his books, which were all he had left, since the rest of his property had been confiscated or destroyed. Later, he took up the residence in Washington, and while performing his duties as Grand Commander, he again entered into the practice of law and still found time to give to his poetry and other writings. His love for Masonry had grown deeper and deeper, and in 1879, feeling that there was much work still undone, he closed his brilliant career in law and devoted the remaining years of his life to research and the study for the benefit of the Scottish Rite. At the time of his retirement from the practice of law, he had been a Mason for 30 years, having joined the order when he was 41. The fact that by the time he was 50, he became Sovereign Grand Commander of the Supreme Council is part of our proud history and an outstanding tribute to the man. Albert Pike joined the order when many men were still hesitant to do so. Masonry was just emerging from the anti-movement brought about by the misconceptions which were seized upon and given wide circulation by its enemies in an attempt to discredit and destroy Freemasonry in America, and thus remove it as an obstacle in advancing their un-American designs. Brother Pike immediately recognized the spirit of brotherhood and the extensiveness of the symbolism that characterizes the craft. He knew that the status of man was not as it should be or could be. He knew also that reforms come slowly, by degrees, and that Masonry had the opportunity to perform a great mission, and that through strengthening and enlarging the order, the world at large could be spiritually, morally, and ethically benefited. Our rituals, as revised by him and his morals and dogma, contain some of the most profound thinking and philosophy ever to come from the mind of man. Throughout those writings, he points out the analogy of the principles of freedom with the principles of Freemasonry and emphasizes the ideals of service to our fellows, our country, and to mankind. His concern was that man is inclined to allow his own pleasures and idolence to mitigate against these ideals. By precept and example, he endeavored to instill in the heart of every Mason the desire to contribute something to life that will outlive his days on earth, something which will be of benefit to mankind. Not only Masonry, but all Protestantism is deeply indebted to Albert Pike for his classic and comprehensive reply to the encyclical Humanum Genus of Pope Leo XIII. That reply is one of the most outstanding documents of all time, and it is wise and essential that this Supreme Council should continue to make it available to its members. It incontrovertibly refutes the distortions of fact as stated by Pope Leo, and which the Vatican to this day has not seen fit to rescind or amend. No better argument on any subject was ever written, and the non-Catholic world, as well as Masonry, has acclaimed it for its clarity and its comprehensive rebuttal of untruths. Although Humanum Genus was supposedly a condemnation of Freemasonry, it was in fact an invective against all men and communities of men who dared to interpret God's laws according to their own ideas of thought and conscience, or who dared to differ with the assumed infallibility of the Vatican, or any principles of doctrine contrary to its own. Albert Pike in his answer again made it clear that Freemasonry is not an enemy of the Catholic religion, and that the claim that Freemasonry will not accept Catholics is untrue. Although Albert Pike was a master in many lines of endeavor, his brethren recognize him as the world's most renowned Scottish Rite Mason and will be forever grateful for his work in behalf of Freemasonry and the Scottish Rite. Truly, he built his temple in the hearts of men, a temple that man and the elements cannot destroy. I'm sure that past Sovereign Grand Commander Albert Pike would be glad to know that his efforts were not in vain, that his rituals are still very definitely in use and most highly regarded, and that his writings are preserved for the future generations of man. I believe he would be proud of the Supreme Council and its illustrious leadership as it exists today, and that, inspired by him, our cause, which is the cause of human progress, shall progress with greater vigor. Well, I hope you enjoyed that. We are going to read another piece by Albert Pike in just a couple weeks. Spoiler alert, I'm going to be talking with a couple Australian brothers here in just a couple weeks, so we'll have that episode coming up as well. So the continuation of this Albert Pike, probably a 3 or 4 part series, will continue, of course, probably skipping every other week to give us a little bit of a break, time to check into other subjects and to clear your mind and maybe some time to think about everything that we talked about previously. So with that, let's go right into this week's Masonic Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison.
You will raise your arm to a level square and repeat after me. I do hereby swear before the great and living God that during my engagement, I will under no circumstances use profane language, that I will drink no intoxicating liquors, that I will not quarrel or fight with any other employee of the firm, and that in every aspect I will conduct myself honestly, be faithful to my duties, and so direct all my acts as to win the confidence of my employers. So help me God. With that oath, many rugged young men joined the Pony Express during its short life from April 1860 to October 1861. Alexander Majors from Golden Square Lodge 107 in Westport, Missouri, founded the organization along with Brother William H. Russell of Lexington Lodge No. 149. Majors was the author of the oath, which, not surprisingly, had Masonic undertones. Although short-lived, it was an organization that quickly became part of the fabric, folklore, and history of the United States. In its day, the Pony Express offered the promise of untold adventure. To the general population, its young riders were, in many respects, the equivalent of today's rock stars. Writers garnered fame, if not fortune, as well as the favor of young girls. One doubtful legend attributes the invention of the donut to a young girl who made pastries with a hole so a writer could scoop them up on a finger as he whizzed by. It's understandable then how an energetic young man, even a kid of that day, would want to join the Pony Express. Given the burden on the horses, Russell and Majors were more concerned with weight than age. Unfettered by today's child labor laws, they hired some very young riders, all anxious to join this elite group. One of those young riders was a kid who would grow up to become famous in his own right. William Frederick Cody, born February 26, 1846 in Iowa Territory, was only 14 years old when he became a Pony Express rider. William grew up to be known by a more familiar name, Buffalo Bill. Cody had worked as a courier for Russell and Majors from the time he was 10, and parlayed that into a job as a rider when they started the Pony Express. His ride ran 116 miles from Red Buttes to the Three Crossing Station in Nebraska. A born showman, Cody certainly did nothing to subdue wild stories of his exploits as a rider. In later life, as he wrote of his adventures, he claimed skirmishes with Native Americans and other harrowing adventures, including an assertion that he held the record for the longest single-day ride ever. Historians estimate that ride at about 300 miles, an arduous day in the saddle for anyone. Cody, a member of Platte Valley Lodge 32 in Nebraska, went on to serve as a general in the Nebraska National Guard. He received the Medal of Honor for gallantry as a scout to the U.S. Army, served in the Nebraska legislature, fought at the Battle of Wounded Knee, and was president of the Shoshone Irrigation Company. A staunch abolitionist, Cody was years ahead of his time as a proponent for Native American and women's rights. He eventually became a performer traveling the world with his Wild West show, and it all started with the Pony Express. Lasting only a year and a half, the lifespan of the Pony Express is little more than a blip on the expanse of United States history. Yet its legend lives on as a testament to good old Yankee ingenuity with a strong Masonic connection. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, as usual, amazing segments. Can't get enough of them. If you like them, please let us know. Please follow Stephen L. Harrison on Twitter. And also, please check out his books on Amazon.com, Tales from the Craft, and also Freemasons at Oak Island. Two tremendous books. If you're lucky enough to have a copy of Freemasonry Crosses the Mississippi, great. If not, if you can find it and it's not, you know, $1,000, try to pick it up. It's a great book. Now is the part of the show where we have to pay the bills. So please head on over to www.wcypodcast.com, click on support the show, and click through our links to onitlabs.com. Freemasonry is all about making good men better, and we do that through spiritual growth. Onit has some really great healthy living supplements that make better men even better. One of the greatest products that I love is Alpha Brain. It's a nootropic vitamin, so it carries a lot of the same vitamins your body needs in order to make your brain function faster, quicker. There's a lot of chemistry that goes into the workings of your brain, a lot of electrical impulses, synapses, and make your brain function quickly and clearly. And one of the things that's great about Alpha Brain is it does that through their formula, but what's nice is there's no caffeine in it. So you don't have to worry about excess caffeine or green tea stuff or anything like that. This is nootropic vitamin that works really well. And they have Alpha Brain Instant now, which is really cool too. It dissolves in about 8 ounces of water. And I use that all the time as well. So check those out. If you use the coupon code WCY at the checkout, you're going to get 10% off also. And they send a little bit back to the show for helping keep this show on the air. So do yourself a favor, do the show a favor, and be a producer. Go pick up some Alpha Brain or anything else on Audit.com and click through our links and use the code WCY to get a nice discount. Of course, we have PayPal donations, which you can donate 50 cents or a dollar, whatever you want to donate, you can donate right there through the Support the Show links. And if you head on over to the limited edition shop, you can buy a pin, a tie bar, or cufflinks. I believe I still have one tie bar left, but we've got the rest of that stuff on there. Everything is shipped out by me personally, so thank you very much for everybody who has been purchasing pins and all those other things and making those donations. We can't make this show without you. This is listener supported. So just browsing Facebook, I ran across a great little tidbit there on the Ancient Accepted Scottish Rite Northern Masonic Jurisdictions Facebook page, and I thought it was really interesting because I love Oak Island. Obviously, I talk about Brother Stephen L. Harrison's book. So it said, the first evidence of Freemasonry in North America appeared in Nova Scotia. A stone engraved on the top with a square and compasses was found on the shore of Goat Island in the Annapolis Basin in Nova Scotia. In the center of the flat slab was the date 1606. Dr. Charles T. Jackson of Boston wrote about it in 1829, calling it the Annapolis Stone. The stone is said to have become a part of the wall for a building. It was covered with cement and never found again. So, pretty interesting. Which brings us on to this week's famous Freemason. The great composer Jean Sibelius, who was born on December 8, 1865, and he passed away on the 20th of September, 1957. He was a Finnish composer and violinist of the late Romantic and early modern periods. He was widely recognized as his country's greatest composer, and through music, he's often credited with having helped Finland to develop a national identity during its struggle for independence from Russia. The great composer was 56 years old when he was initiated, passed, and raised, starting at 10 a.m. and ended at 7 p.m. with an intermission of an hour out for lunch. Pretty fantastic. That's it for this week. Please remember to find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at WentzKMU. Don't forget about the Midnight Freemasons, publishing 3 articles every single week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. We go live on Tuesday nights at 10, 9 central, the Masonic Roundtable. Last week, we talked about the Lodge as a business. Great, great points. I always learn a lot, and we love taking the questions from the brothers live who are asking questions as we are live on YouTube. If you missed the program on YouTube, you can always go back and watch the episode, or you can just listen to it. We do have a podcast version, which is out there on iTunes, so just do that. And if you like this show or any of the other programs and things we're doing, please remember to rate them on iTunes. It helps us get found. It helps spread the light of Masonry. And of course, this show is also meant for men who are not yet Masons. And so by rating the show, you increase the visibility on iTunes, and maybe somebody who's not a brother yet's going to see it and listen and join, because it happens all the time. So again, thank you so much for all of your support and your donations. This is creating a great thing. Those donations enabled us to get a nice mic and a program out and the equipment able to get to Adam Thayer so that he can increase the quality of his content for this show. And I think you guys will all really enjoy what we're going to do next. Don't miss next week. Next week is going to be amazing. So until then, stay on the level. But whence came you? I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.